And today is the 17th. Does that sound right to you? April 17th?
Today's Thursday, isn't it?
Wednesday.
Wednesday is the 16th.
16th. Well, I'm talking here with George Ormsby, and correct me if this information is incorrect. You were born November 24th, 1916, in Village Green, Aston Township, Pennsylvania. How close is that to where we are now?
About 3 miles.
So you've kind of...
It's still Aston Township.
It still is, yes.
Yeah.
And is the home where you were a child still standing?
No, there's an old building of the foundation now. It burned down some years after we sold the property.
Mm-hmm. And I know a little bit about your parents, but not their names, actually. What was your father's name?
My father was Robert C., standing for Cooper, but Cooper was his mother's maiden name.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was Mattie, M-A-T-T-I-E. Middleton.
That was her name?
Mattie B. for Burns, Middleton.
Mm-hmm. And what was your father's profession?
Well, he was primarily a farmer.
Really?
Although the latter years of his life, he was in charge of repairing and keeping the roads in shape in this township.
Mm-hmm. This was much more open farm country, I imagine.
Oh, yes.
And he also worked for the community, for the borough, doing the road maintenance?
Well, at road maintenance, he was what they called a roadmaster. That was an employee of the township. It was mm-hmm. not a borough, it's a township.
Okay. Okay. And was that like later on in his years?
Well, it was the last 6 years of his life.
I see.
Six, 8 years, really.
I see. And
1922 to 1930.
Okay. And your mother was a school teacher?
Taught school in this township for 14 years, the same village school.
What grade? What level?
Well, she started out there teaching 1 to 4 grades. Then there was a plant mill in the town called or Village Aston Mills,
mm-hmm.
and the mill shut down. And then a lot of people moved away because they didn't have employment, so after mm-hmm. that she taught all 8 grades.
Oh, boy.
Wasn't unusual in those days.
Did she like doing that?
Well, I guess she did. I never heard her say she didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when she married my father, she finished the school year and then stopped teaching.
Oh, she stopped. So how long had she been teaching before that, do you think?
Well, she was. She started to teach when she was 21. She was married when she was 35.
Okay. Okay, so she was at it for a while.
Oh, yeah.
And do the roots of your family on both sides go back a long way in this area?
My mother's mother's people was named Burns. They went back to 1841 when they came from Ireland and settled in a place called Millburn. Town still exists near mm-hmm. the suburb of Philadelphia, between Philadelphia and Upper Darby.
Mm-hmm.
And they were her. Great-grandfather was what they call a millwright. That's a man that puts up the shafting and the belts and things like that in mills, factories.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They came to this area 2 years later for him to work at a plant. The building still stands right down the bottom of the hill.
Okay. And on your father's side?
My father's side, they were farmers.
For many generations standing, as far as you know?
I don't know much about my father's family. They originally came from a town in England called Ormsby, and I have visited that.
Oh.
But there's nobody named Ormsby living there anymore.
Hmm.
But my mother told me, see, he died when I was 14. She said he never would talk about his family, so we really don't know too much about the family.
Mm-hmm.
She felt there'd been some family problems, and he didn't want to talk about it.
I know that happens.
But I had a half-sister. He was married before.
Mm-hmm.
A half-sister was 18 years older from me.
Mm-hmm.
She lived to be 99 and a half.
Mm-hmm. Did she live in this area, too?
Yes, all her life. In fact, she lived in the house she was born in all her life. Until she went into a retirement community,
mm-hmm.
so when she was 80, so she lived 80 years in the same house.
I know that you lived, you know, and we'll get into this later, away from this area for a while and then came back. Is there something about this part of the world that really keeps people here, do you think?
Well, I don't know how to answer that. I'll tell you what brought me, took me away, what brought me back. I worked for a company, a textile company. I was a mechanic for them called the Loom Fixer. That fixes the machinery that does the weaving. And they have a plant in Mount Joy, Pennsylvania, which is part of Lancaster County, between mm-hmm. Lancaster and Harrisburg. And they moved me up there to work because they moved some of the machinery from here up, and it was different from the machinery they had up there,
mm-hmm.
different kind of looms, weaving machinery. So they took me up to get it started and then offered me a job, and I stayed for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
I came back here after the war, because I was offered a job back here in a textile plant,
mm-hmm.
Paying me 50% more than I was making up there. So I came back.
That would do it. That would do it. Do you know how your parents met?
Well, yes. They lived in the Village Green, both of them, and they went to Mount Hope Methodist Church. The families knew each other for years.
Mm-hmm.
There was no sudden meeting or anything.
I see. Did you know any of your grandparents at all?
Dead before my time.
I see. Are you an only child, or?
Well, the only one that lived.
I see. I see. So really, your parents were your family, or
yes.
your family. What values did your parents instill in you, do you think?
Well, what values? Honesty, truthfulness, hard work.
And they were Methodists,
yes.
I take it. Did they raise you in a very religious home?
Well, I don't know exactly what you mean by religious home, but there's no smoking and no drinking and no swearing.
Uh-huh.
And I would say they lived a good Christian life. They're not fanatical, but a good mm-hmm. Christian life.
They gave you a sense of what was right and wrong.
Oh, absolutely.
Did you attend church much?
Always.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in church.
Mm-hmm.
My mother had an uncle who was a Methodist evangelist for the Philadelphia area.
Mm-hmm.
And he came and preached at Mount Hope Methodist Church, where we attended when I was about 8, and preached for the children's meeting. And I took him home, of course, for Sunday dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked the kids, any of them that were interested in going to heaven, to come forward and talk to him. And he did, but I didn't go forward. Well, I talked to him after dinner at the home, and so he told my parents, he said, well, George knows the Lord. He said, I'm going to tell a Mount Hope minister to take him in on probation. And he did, and I'm actually been a church member ever since, but not always a Mount Hope. I was out of Mount Hope membership for a long time, although I'm back in it again now.
You were an elder in the Presbyterian Church in America, is that correct?
Yes.
Now, that's not the same as the congregation of your family.
No.
That's something
well,
else.
As I said, I attend Mount Hope Church now, although it's what they call an associate membership.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still a member of PLPCA, mm-hmm. Presbyterian Church of America,
mm-hmm.
and I'm a retired or inactive elder, I guess you call it.
Mm-hmm. Losing my place. What do you remember about your childhood when you think back? Are there things that stand out?
What stands out?
Yes.
Well, being around the animals in the barn and the milking and things like that. I can remember as I grew older, I used to go to the eggs for my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go out and ride in the hay wagon when they went out in the field. You know, it was a dairy farm.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a lot of manure. And this may be interesting, it may be quite funny. We were riding with the hired man, I was, when the horses took a sudden leap and both of us went over backwards into the pile of manure. So I went in the house and my mother cleaned me up, and she said, what are you going to do now? She hadn't changed my clothes. She just washed me off. I said, well, I'm going back out to ride with Roy. She said, well, are you okay? Wear the same clothes here to ride with Roy.
Yeah, that was kind of a lesson, I would think.
But I had some farm instructions. I could milk cows. And those days, that was the days before milking machines, you know. We milked them by hand.
Did you think that you'd be a farmer when you grew up, or that didn't
No, occur? Because my father had a heat stroke when I was about four, and they sold the farm, and so when he became working for the township.
I see.
And I never had any desire to be a farmer.
Mm-hmm. When you were growing up, most people in this area were farmers?
Oh, yes.
And did you attend, like, a small school? What kind of...
My mother was a school teacher and taught me at home.
I see.
By the time I was 14, I had a high school education.
Was there a reason why she decided to do it that way?
Well, I don't know how to answer that, really. She just said she was going to teach me at home, and she did.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing I can tell you right now. I don't remember.
And it worked out pretty well.
Wait a second, if I get a...
Sure.
I never thought to ask her why she decided to do it, but she did.
Well, it sounds like it worked out pretty well.
Well, worked out fine.
Did you ever get into Philadelphia when you were young, when you were small?
A couple times a year, my mother would take the train to Philadelphia to go shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And I went along with her sometimes. She had an account of two of the big department stores in Philadelphia.
That must have been pretty different than the world that you knew day to day, I would think.
Well, I don't recall, except that we rode the train in and got off Broad Street Station and then take the subway down to 8th Street. That's mm-hmm. where Litz were on one quarter and Gimbel's on the other. And Wanamaker's was two blocks away, so we used to go shopping in those places like twice a year, and they'd order what they want, and they would be sent out to us by train.
I see. Now, I understand that your father was involved with the Prohibition Party.
Well, only that not anything more than he always voted for a Prohibition Party and said he was a prohibitionist. He never went out and did any politicking.
Did he ever mention why he voted the prohibitionist ticket rather than, say, the Republican ticket or the Democratic
ticket?
Well,
because he didn't approve of the big parties, liquor parties they had to try to get votes.
Mm-hmm.
Being an old-time Methodist, why, you don't drink and you don't smoke and you don't swear, so that being the way the politicians were in the major parties didn't sit very well.
Was he the only person that voted that way in this area back then?
Oh, no, it was quite, back in his day, there was a lot of, the Prohibition Party was strong here.
Mm-hmm. So that wasn't so unusual?
No.
Did he talk?
They never had enough to win any major offices, but they always were on the ballot.
You had the impression that, say, the Republicans weren't strong enough against liquor control to earn the Prohibition vote.
No, they weren't. Neither party was, the major parties were against the sale of liquor.
Mm-hmm.
The liquor interest funded them,
mm-hmm.
and still does.
And that was true for both parties?
Absolutely.
Did he talk much about that to you? It sounds like you picked that kind of up from
him. Well, I don't remember that we had any discussions about it. I just knew that's the way it was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did your mother vote, or was she...
couldn't vote. Women couldn't vote till what, about 1919?
Yes. After that?
Sure she voted.
And did she vote Prohibition, as far as you know, as well?
As I was young, the Prohibition Party was no longer on the ticket in this area.
Oh, so that was before your memory, really?
Yes.
I see. He wasn't voting it so much. It was before you were born. Probably before National Prohibition was in effect? That he was voting the Prohibition ticket, you think?
Well, of course. It was before it was in effect. Of course he voted it before that.
I say that because the Prohibition Party, of course, continued.
Yeah, but he always believed in Prohibition, so he always voted when it was on the ballot.
Do you remember, as a child, Prohibition being in effect here and across the country?
Yes, I do. I remember the difference in the what you saw on the streets and the roads after they repealed the Prohibition.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, you didn't see any drunks laying on the street. You didn't see any women going to tap rooms. You didn't have any tap rooms.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, it was not uncommon to see drunks.
So you remember the contrast. You
remember
it changing.
Definitely.
Your family must have felt bad when Prohibition was repealed.
I don't remember any discussion about it, but I was... I remember living for a time in a house next door to a Battle Hope parsonage,
mm-hmm.
and my mother and the preacher talking about it, and she said if the churches don't stand up for Prohibition, it's going to be repealed.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, he said, Mrs. Ormsby, I can remember him saying that. Oh, no, that'll never happen. 2 years later, it did happen.
Mm. And do you have the impression in this area that the churches didn't really stand up for it? Or
no.
Hmm.
I don't say they drank, but they didn't do any campaigning for it.
I see. What do you say to people, you know, who didn't live through those times, or even the ones that did, that say that Prohibition was not successful, that it wasn't...
I don't think they know what they're talking about. I lived through it. I saw the difference in how the drunks on the street and how people drank and afterwards, and knew it wasn't so before.
Mm-hmm.
People who say it didn't work don't know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Did issues related to temperance and prohibition touch your family even indirectly? I mean, did you have friends or relatives that had struggled with drink or anything of that kind?
Friends. We knew people like that, but... my own family, we haven't had that problem.
Mm-hmm.
Or my wife's family either, as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm. Did your parents care about any other social or political issues besides Prohibition?
How's that?
Did your parents care about any other political or social issues besides Prohibition?
Well, they always voted Republican, and they felt that the Republican Party was more business-oriented, and I can't recall any big discussions about it, but this was pretty much a Republican area.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the commissioners in the township were Republican. Once in a while, you'd get a Democrat elected.
Now, of course, before that, there were people that voted Prohibitionist or Prohibition, and they probably switched over to the Republican Party when the party...
Primarily, well, I'm not sure that's absolutely true. My half-sister's husband had a political position. He was a farmer, but he still had this political position.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while, he was what they call a truant officer.
Truant officer?
You know what that is?
That goes after kids that don't go to school.
Well, that's right.
Yes.
Yeah. That's right. But I found as time went on that my father and mother were very well thought of.
Mm-hmm.
After my father died, we were a little bit hard up financially, and my mother owned an old house that had been a twin and made into a single and was big.
Mm-hmm.
She had trouble renting it, but nobody wanted to pay the rent. The equipment needed to be paid for that size house, so she wanted to put it back into a twin house.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a friend who was a carpenter, and he agreed to do it based on that she would give him half the rent until he was paid off.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the lumber yard, and this man had been a commissioner in the township, and my father, of course, worked under them.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to him and told him the story, and I said, "No, I don't have any money, but we'll give you half the rent. The other half goes to Jim Townsend. We'll give you half the rent until you're paid off." I'll never forget what he told me.
What was that?
He said, "You can have anything you want. No son of Bob Ormsby will ever welch on his bills."
Mm.
So I gave me something to live up to, and I've tried to live up to it.
That was a real sign of respect. Now, you would tell me about your work with the mill. You started off working in a mill when you were about 15, is that right?
That's right, textile mill.
That was the same one you'd mentioned earlier? Was
no,
it a different
but
company?
These mills were all built along a creek because they're all water powered.
Right.
They were in business before steam engines were invented.
Right.
And so there were three or four of them, right? I can point to, sit here and point to the location of three of them. And if the leaves, if it wasn't for the trees, you could see them. You can see two of them anyway.
Well, there's one at the corner of Lenny and New.
Yes, that's one of them.
Yes.
That was called, that was a plush mill.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to say, your plush is a form of cloth that's used for upholstery.
Mm-hmm.
And then right down the hill from us was a worsted mill. That's a good grade of cloth for men's suiting.
Mm-hmm.
And across the creek on the other side was Brown's mill where I worked, and they made a cheaper variety of cloth.
And right. These mills had been there since the 19th century. They've
been there a long time. They've been there. They were all water powered. They were all there when my grandparents, my mother's side, came from Ireland. They were all existed then.
Mm-hmm.
Further down the creek, there was one that made towels. It was a towel mill, Turkish towels.
Mm-hmm.
And alongside of it was another plush mill. And further down the road was a tapestry mill. Now, if you don't know what tapestry is, it's
mm-hmm.
primarily curtains.
Yes. Yeah.
Wall coverings. So this was quite a mill town, this whole area. And the reason is because Chester Creek flowed year-round. And
mm-hmm.
you go dry in the summer.
When did the mills start to close down? Do you remember?
World War II.
Mm-hmm. That was the big change.
Yeah, well, it was... They were still running at the close of it, but you asked when did they start?
Yes, was around then.
Yeah, by the 1960s, these mills, as far as their original purpose, were gone.
Mm-hmm.
They, these four buildings that I can think of right now, the Lipsons, Victoria Plush owned it, Yorkshire Worsted, Brown's, and the West Branch was along the same company as Victoria. They still are here. They're still operating with some different type of work business.
Did most
not textile.
Did most of the people that work in those mills live pretty close to them?
Oh, you had to, because that was before the days that anybody owned an automobile.
Mm-hmm.
And keeping a horse and feeding a horse was kind of expensive. People have heard it numerous times about how the mill owners owned the people, they were tied to them. Well, what happened is this, it's not understanding of the situation. To have employees, you had to provide them with housing because they didn't have automobiles, there was no public transportation.
Mm-hmm.
How are they going to get back and forth to work?
Was that true here of these mills? Did they provide housing?
It had to be true. It was true of all the mill areas. If you had to provide housing because they might walk half a mile or a mile from those mills up at Aston Mills.
Mm-hmm.
They might walk from down here up to Aston Mills, but they're not going to walk to Chester.
Generally, did the mill owners have good relations with their workers?
Oh, generally. They were a big family. A lot of the stories you hear about, it's not true.
This area, that was the case. That
absolutely.
And you started at 15 at the Brownsville, did you say?
Yeah, Brown's. John Brown's sons.
And you kind of worked your way up
by the time I was 18, I was running what they call the section looms.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved me to Mountjoy. And when I was 21, I was in charge of one of the mills up there.
Did you like the work?
Yes, I liked it.
You had people under you that you were responsible for?
Well, I was always in charge of producing the looms, and the weavers are piece workers. And if you're a good mechanic, you keep the looms on, they love you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a good mechanic. But I saw the end coming as things began to go to Chester, so I had done a lot of work outside, weekends and so forth.
Yeah.
So my cousin and I went in the plumbing business after that.
What do you think caused the mills to decline and go out of business? Do you have any clue?
Well, first of all, the wages up here were higher than they were in the South. So they began to go to the South, and then after that they went to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a case of what it cost to produce the cloth. I think this country's been very short-sighted and still is. Look at how things are going now to China.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good for us, really.
So you moved to Mountjoy in 1939, is that right?
Well, we moved up there in 1939. I lived there officially to 1947. I say officially because last three of those years I was in the U.S. Navy.
And you met your wife in Mountjoy?
The company found my mother and I a house. They owned some houses in the town,
mm-hmm.
and they had people living in some of them that didn't work for them, and when they rented them to a non-employee, they told them if they needed them for an employee, they would be given 60 days to move.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave these people notice to move, and they moved out almost instantly, well, within a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
My mother and I moved in there, and it turned out that she got very friendly with the next-door neighbor. The next-door neighbor was my wife's aunt.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, now my mother didn't do anything to bring us together, but she didn't interfere with it either. And I saw my wife and her sister at the next-door aunt's, and she took my eye.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived together happily for many years.
Mm-hmm. And her name was Miriam?
Miriam.
And maiden name was?
Ginter, G-I-N-T-E-R.
And were her people from around the Mountjoy area?
They were from Lancaster County.
I see.
Her grandfather, Ginter, and her father, for that goes, were farmers. Although the father, by the time I started going with my wife, he worked for the Hamilton Watch in Lancaster.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't stay with the farming.
I see. And you were married in June 1941.
Yes.
Then you entered the Navy. You were a Navy Seabee in 1943.
That's right.
Did you volunteer? Did you sign up?
No, I was drafted.
Mm-hmm. And why the Navy?
Well, that's interesting. First of all, I'm drafted and sent to a recruiting center.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have asked for deferment, but I felt it was my duty to serve my country. And the company I worked for could have got me off, but I said, no, I think I'll go.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got up to the recruiter, and he looked at my papers, and he said, oh, I got in the Army line, because I can't swim.
Yeah.
And I got up to sign the mm-hmm. papers, and he looked at my papers, and said, you belong over there. I was the Navy. So I got over there, and they shut the line down, I was about three people from the recruiter. I get back over to the Army line. And I got up there, got a man said to me, I told you to get over there. I said, I did, but they shut the line down before I got up there. They're not taking it anymore. And he said, well, they'll take you. Now, I don't know what was in my papers that told him that, but he got up from his chair and took my paper over and pointed it to the other officer with his finger right there. The guy said, come on over, you're in the Sea Beast.
I see.
I said, what's the Sea Beast? He said, Construction Battalion. So because I was a mechanic,
mm-hmm. I see.
I assume that's the reason I...
I see.
I have no real knowledge except to assume that.
Now, you never actually saw service. You were involved with helping to build the Navy supply base, and you managed the base until the end of the war. Is that right?
Yes. We were there, yeah. I was part of the management.
Did you like that experience? Was that?
Oh, yes. If I hadn't had an invalid mother, I'd have stayed in. But my wife's taking care of my mother, so I thought better go home and take care of my mother myself, or at least help my wife
sure.
do it.
Now, from what I understand, when you were in England, that's when you became involved or active in temperance work.
Well, we've always been total abstainers and
mm-hmm.
temperance people.
Mm-hmm.
And I made friends in England by attending a small Methodist church there, and I used to go to their house a couple nights a week, so I went. One Sunday they said, well, what night are you off? I said, I think it was Tuesday, but it don't matter. And I said, well, we won't be there. We're going to a Good Templars meeting. I said, well, what's a Good Templar? He said, well, it's a total abstinence organization. People who are Good Templars don't drink, period. Oh, I said, I never had a drink in my life. So that's for me. I said, well, come on, go to the meeting with us. So I did, and
mm-hmm.
that's when I joined that night.
Mm-hmm.
It's an international organization.
Right, I know that.
And, of course, when I got back here home, I eventually looked them up and I eventually wrote to the international secretary and asked him where it was one in this country, and I got a call from Philadelphia. had an organization in Philadelphia, so he sent the word down to them, and they looked me up.
Why did it appeal to you to be involved with the Good Templars?
Well, I just want to support things I believe in, that's mm-hmm. all.
Was it hard to be an abstainer in the military?
Not at all. I didn't have any problems. I simply didn't drink.
Did people look at you like you were different or
no,
were strange?
Well, no, I don't think so. So nobody put any real pressure on me.
Mm. You know, the reputation is that servicemen are hard drinkers and, you know...
And a lot of bar. I remember being, it's a long story, but I was sitting at a house in Exeter, England one evening, and they had a son-in-law who lived in London, and it was Christmas time,
mm-hmm.
and they were down from London to the daughter and her husband and her children, and I got talking to the son-in-law, and he told me at the end of the evening, he said, "Well, you certainly have given me a different idea about Americans." He said, "The only thing I've seen is on the streets is rowdyism in London."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Well, that's not the way we are.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen the worst."
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was nice that I would give them a different impression of Americans.
I think you gave me the impression that it was not that unusual in this community where you grew up for people to be complete abstainers.
Well, certainly it wasn't.
That wasn't uncommon. And as you grew older and you lived in another town, was there ever a temptation to try alcohol once?
Never tempted me.
Why is it important? Was it important to you for you to never try it even once? Why was that important?
Well, because it was hammered into me as a kid. I remember my father, one of them, said, "Well, you know, you must never take the first drink." I remember my walk going to the store, the country store, on a Friday night with my father. We walked. It was here, right in the village down here.
Mm-hmm.
And the town drunk was laying there, even though it was prohibition. It was bootleggers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And every Friday night, the town drunk was laid in the gutter, dead drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And my father said, "Look at him, that's already killing. You don't want to be like him, do you?" And I said, "No." He said, "Well, then you must never take the first drink." And I never did.
And that made a big impression on you, obviously.
Oh, yes. Well, I honored my father, and he hammered that into me.
So when you got back to the United States, you stayed involved with the Templars.
I got involved about a year later, as I said. I wrote to the head of it, the international office, and asked them who to contact in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't call me, but they sent word to a chapter in Philadelphia, and they contacted me.
Mm-hmm. And this was after you'd moved back to this area and was involved with the plumbing and the heating contracting business.
Yes, it was several years after I got back.
That would have been about what year, do you think?
So I got involved with it?
Yeah, in America.
About 1950.
Okay. And what was the extent of your involvement at that time? What did you do with the organization then?
Well, you know, the organization is primarily a fraternal organization.
Mm-hmm.
So you meet together socially.
Mm-hmm.
That's primarily the purpose of it, to show you can have a good time and socially without the use of alcohol.
It's not that you talk about those issues, you just simply do what other people do without alcohol.
You talk about it somewhat.
Yeah.
You know, when you go in, you take the pledge not to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And the understanding is that if you take the one drink, you've automatically resigned.
Mm-hmm. Has that ever happened in your involvement where somebody
I've seen it happen.
That must be quite a disgrace and must be kind of emotional.
Well, people don't have the willpower, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That was never my problem. I guess I have strong willpower. I remember my father saying one time, and I don't know what brought it up, but he said, "That boy, I believe he'd say it's the devil," pointing his finger at me. So I don't know what brought it up. I don't remember that part, but I remember him saying that.
Mm-hmm. So the Good Templars really didn't reach out beyond their organization to do works in the community or anything of that kind. It was just...
A little bit. Some places. They did, around the Chicago and Minneapolis area, they definitely did.
What did they do there?
Well, I'll tell you what they did in the Chicago area. Mm-hmm. They run, and still do, a big country camp, mm-hmm. where people can go and have a cottage and so forth and go and associate with other people without being tempted to drink. Mm-hmm. And then they have children's camps, mm-hmm. where they teach them total abstinence. Mm-hmm. Minneapolis has that.
Is that still going on?
Oh, yes, definitely. Very strong. They have a summer camp where they go, kids can go for the summer. Mm-hmm. And they also do that in the Seattle, Washington area.
At least when you joined, or still, did the Good Templars ever take a position on prohibition? Were they on record as favoring it? Did they take
Oh, absolutely. Oh, sure.
They're in favor of
prohibitionists, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
But they didn't necessarily get involved with efforts to...
They were not politicians.
Yeah.
They told you to vote prohibition where it was on the ballot.
Mm-hmm. When you joined, like in the 50s, were they involved in trying to prohibit alcohol anywhere actively in this area? Was that fight kind of over?
No. My wife and I and another couple run a total... You know, Pennsylvania believes in local option.
Right.
So we run a local option campaign here one year, and we did quite well, but not well enough to get anybody elected. And the amazing point about it was that the churches didn't really support us, but the Catholic priest down, right at the Catholic church, you'd look out the front door and see the top of the church. Mm-hmm. The Catholic priest said, well, I can't come out openly and tell my people to vote for you, but I'm going to pray that you're successful.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because traditionally the Catholic Church was not thought of as supporting
prohibition. Well, see, they didn't support it, but he did it personally. He said, well, I'm going to pray for you.
Mm-hmm. What year was that? Do you remember? How long ago that might have been?
It was early 60s, I guess, so I don't really remember.
And there haven't been any attempts since then to do that?
Well, the trouble is that we have not, as an organization, done anything very much to attract younger people. Mm-hmm. And the older people died off, and that's the end of the organization. Mm-hmm. Now, like I said, in the Chicago area and in the Seattle area, in Minneapolis, they run youth camps, so they got the chance to bring some younger people in.
Mm-hmm. When you joined in the 50s, what sort of people joined the Good Templars? How would you describe the kind of person that joined?
Well, mostly they were certainly total abstinence. People were willing at least to say they weren't drinkers, and they mm-hmm. were willing to say, it don't mean anything to me, I'll take the oath not to drink. Mm-hmm. And they were just normal middle-class people, that's all. Some were business people.
They weren't of a certain background anything of that kind?
Not here.
Yeah.
Now, the ones that kept it going in the Chicago and Minneapolis areas are mostly Scandinavian.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the Scandinavians are stubborn people.
A lot of them, yeah.
And a man said to me one time, I forget where I met him, but he said to me, well, you're not Scandinavian. And I said, no. He said, well, how come you're a Good Templar? I said, they were all Scandinavians. And I said, no, they're not all Scandinavians. The Good Templars are people who don't use alcohol, period.
But in his mind, they were really associated.
Well, everyone he knew was Scandinavian.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they stuck it out. All the others would give up.
Mm-hmm. So you'll
find that wherever they're active, they're of Scandinavian background.
Mm-hmm. Did the growth of Alcoholics Anonymous affect the Good Templars at all?
No.
They were completely different sorts mm-hmm. of different organizations. Did the Good Templars take a position on Alcohol Anonymous's work or anything of that kind?
Not that I know of. Of course, anybody that agrees that we shouldn't drink, we're in sympathy with them, you know.
Mm-hmm. So I take it that at least around that time, if not before, you personally favored prohibition, reinstating prohibition
absolutely.
Whenever possible.
Absolutely.
Did you ever doubt that position? Was that always firm in your mind?
Yes. I don't. I tell you the way I look at it, the people as a whole generally don't have the courage to stand up for what they believe in, and regardless of who they're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it don't matter to me who I'm talking to. I'll tell them I'm against the use of alcohol, period.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of people who won't, don't drink, but they won't stand up and take a position.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes in other things besides drinking.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't become involved actually in the Prohibition Party until the 1980s, is that right?
That's right.
And what caused that? How did that happen?
Let me think. I guess I went as a delegate from the Good Temper Organization to the National Prohibition Party's convention.
Was that not uncommon for Good Templars to do?
Did that's they... right, it wasn't uncommon. And I'll tell you, a person strong in a Good Templar was also a Prohibition Party in Maine. In the state of Maine, the Prohibition Party was pretty strong.
Yes.
Up, and I guess still is. And at least they're Prohibitionists, their mm-hmm. people are. And so I went as a delegate to the National Prohibition Party's convention.
Mm-hmm.
In, where was it that year? I can't think where it was now.
And what year was this?
I don't remember.
Was it the 80s, the 1980s?
Oh, before that.
70s.
About 1970.
Okay.
And anyhow, I got to know Earl Dodge, and finally at one of these conventions, Earl Dodge called me and asked me if I would be his vice presidential candidate.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, sure, why not? So.
Just going back for a minute, who were some of the first people involved with the party that you knew? Do you remember their names? Did you get to know them at all?
Was the Prohibition Party?
Yes, yes.
I'm trying to think of the guy's name up in Maine.
Was he the fellow that ran as the presidential candidate one year?
Yeah.
His name was Ben, maybe? I should know this.
Yes.
Yes,
I can't think of his name either.
But I remember he had run as the presidential candidate, I think.
Yes.
And how did you know him? Through the Templars?
Yes.
And what was your impression of him as a person? Did you get an impression of him?
Oh, Ben was a wonderful guy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How
dedicated
would you
to the cause, no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
I got involved in them because they asked me to come up to Maine one time to speak to their convention.
In Maine?
Yes.
And you did do that?
Oh, yes. I traveled a lot for them, for the Prohibition Party.
What was your first speech about up in Maine? Do you remember?
Oh, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it was about.
Let me just flip this.